I think here in Psalm 94 we have what was originally a Psalm of David, perhaps at the time of his persecution by Absalom and his exile from the sanctuary, that is then, under inspiration, reapplied to the exiles in Babylon. And the question is, verse 3, Yahweh, how long will the wicked triumph? And as with a lot of these psalms, the psalmist, who I suggest was originally David, begins discussing a question with God and feeling, look, how long? Why are you so absent? And yet, in the course of the psalm, he persuades himself of the answer. And I think every spiritual person will have seen that. And he comes to the conclusion at the end, verse 22, 23, Yahweh has been my high tower, my God, the rock of my refuge. God has come through for me in the past, verse 23, and he will cut them off in their own wickedness. Yahweh, our God, will cut them off. So he starts off with this question of how long, why are you apparently passive, why are you so distant? And he persuades himself by the end of the psalm that, sure, God has come through for me and he is going to act. But how then does he come to that self-persuasion in the course of the prayer? Well, you know, we should know from our own example, our own experience, that you start praying and you discuss questions with God, and during the course of the prayer you arise from your knees at the end persuaded of the answer, and the questions are no longer so burning, and the sense of injustice and anger, even with God or with the situation, is no longer there. Just shows that prayer is not firing a list of requests at God. I keep saying this, read the Psalms. Note how many times he actually specifically makes a request for something in his prayers. They're all prayers, these Psalms. Well, very rarely. These prayers are all as prayer should be, a pouring out of our soul to God, a discussion with God of our innermost feelings and fears and doubts and questions. And as I say, in the presence of God, in the presence of prayer, this often resolves itself. Well, he says, verse 9, he who implanted the ear, won't he hear? He who formed the eye, won't he see? He thinks about that. Look, God created ears and eyes. So, of course, he is going to be seeing and hearing. Of course, he is sensitive. Now, in the context of the exiles, these same ideas are found in Isaiah 59, Ezekiel 12, where the exiles were saying, look, God's ear is dull of hearing. He is not seeing us. His eye is not upon us. He has turned away his face and his eyes from us. But now the faithful exile in the thoughts of David, praying the thoughts of David, reflects, well, he who created the ear will hear. He who formed the eye, can he not see? Of course. Verse 11, Yahweh knows the thoughts of man, that they are futile. So he does see, and he does not only see, but he sees right into the futile thoughts of man. We note how God is particularly sensitive to human thought. In fact, when you read the record of the flood in Genesis 6, the whole destruction of the flood came because God saw that the thoughts of man and the imaginations of his heart, his mind, were wicked continually. And yet God apparently did nothing for a very long time whilst he saw those vain thoughts of man. And of course it's the same here. And it's the same in our lives. The apparent silence of God is because he has a larger game plan. It is not because he does not notice. I think we're used to our human reactions, where you see or hear something and you act immediately and often rashly. But God is not like that. He has the ability to see and hear and not respond immediately. And that not responding immediately may be, as in the case of the exiles for at least 70 years, or it could be likewise for 120 years or more at the time of the flood. So this is something that you come to grasp as you get to know God better, that he has absolute ability to notice, and he does. He is of supreme and ultimate sensitivity, not just to what is going on, what is being done, what is being said. He hears that, he sees it, but also he knows the thoughts of man, verse 11, and he knows what they're like, how futile they are. So God knows things and sees things, but he doesn't act immediately. And it is only the person who doesn't know God very well who will say, huh, well, why doesn't God do something about it then? Well, this is something you have to come to terms with, that God is not a man, that God does not act just immediately. Ooh, I noticed something. Oh, bang, you know, let me just clobber that. Let me just put that right. I noticed it. Straight away, I'm on the job. I'm on the case. You see, God is not a magician, and God is not a manipulator. He doesn't force people. He works very carefully within the free will desires of human beings, so that by all accounts, he is a confirmer of man in the way man wishes to go, but he is not a manipulator, because we are not puppets. He actually respects us more than that. And so that is yet another little window onto the apparent inaction of God, especially in relation to issues of justice.